Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I want to duck back over to London. I've kept Adam Collins up. We're on the eve of the World Test Championship. So tomorrow night, every ball on SEN Test Cricket. Australia and India at the Oval. Here's Steve Smith in prospect of what's to come.
It's really important. I think the World Test Championship now, having the two best teams play in a final, I think is great. Adds a little bit more relevance, I suppose, to Test cricket. So it's what we all worked towards for a couple of years. And this week should be an exciting one. And, yeah, the guys are looking forward to it. We're certainly confident that we can win, yeah.
Steve Smith. Righto, I've kept him up late. He's going to lead our SEN Test cricket coverage tomorrow night. Every ball of the World Test Championship followed by the Ashes. Adam Collins is with me. Collo, welcome back to the show.
Great to be here, Jared. Yeah, it feels like we're about to go on this sort of two-month journey together overnight through the wee hours of the morning. It's very special, isn't it, hearing cricket on the radio from England, and it's a privilege to be, narrating 2 months of extraordinary cricket.
What sort of feel does the World Test Championship have? Does it feel like a main event, or does it feel like the entree?
It certainly did today at the Oval. Jared, you've been at ICC events before, and it's got its whole sort of caravan around it, and everyone's there, so I feel like it's going to be a big deal. Capacity of nearly 28,000 out at the Oval, so given it's a venue that always sells out when India play there anyway, you can expect big crowds, loud, and all the rest of it, and it'll feel serious, that's for sure.
Yeah, so there is a vibe, there is demand for it?
Oh, absolutely. It's sold out, like, as quickly as an Ashes Test match would. So it'll look and feel the real deal. And the players are taking it that way too. We heard from Rahul Dravid earlier today, who spoke like a man who understood how important this is for the bigger picture of Test cricket. Steve Smith alluded to it as well today about the broader risks and the direction of travel with Test cricket outside of the big, say, three or four countries in the world. And, you know, we've had these conversations over the last 12 months or so. I think they understand that a successful week at the Oval will help contribute to strengthening the case for Test cricket into the future as well.
Yeah, so what would a successful week at the Oval look like, do you think?
I think, yes, it's the crowds, that's part of it, but two sides duking it out and it not it having a competitive balance, I think. That's what we saw 2 years ago at Southampton when India played New Zealand. It went all the way to the sixth day, which is a weird thing to say, but there were 2 days rained out, so they were able to act on that final day, and that was a thrilling test match that finished in the final session. And I suppose we should be so lucky to have a test match going into the fifth or indeed the sixth day where both sides can win.
It has no runway, so it's got 2 years of build-up, but it's got no runway. Is it sort of a slightly odd proposition, Australia and India on English soil out of IPL and whatever else has been going on? Does it feel on an island?
Yeah, I think that's more a feature. Like, I think that it is odd to see two countries playing a test match on a neutral venue, that it's something you can kind of lean into, right? That it's not going to provide a home ground advantage to either side. But it will affect selection. Take India, for example. I mean, we were there in Delhi, Jared, a few months ago, and it would be inconceivable to leave Ashwin out of India's side in India. But his record away from India simply isn't as strong. So he might find himself out of the final 11. Jadeja is a more natural fit in the UK. They can bat him at six. They have that extra flexibility built in that way. They can play a fourth seamer. I mean, it just shows that if we were playing this final in India, it'd be a very different proposition. So, yeah, I'm sort of viewing it as a feature, not a flaw.
What's the vibe around the Australian setup been like?
Well, Michael Nisa didn't really bowl today. So he was drafted into the Australian squad over the weekend for Josh Hazlewood. But the energy has been all about Boland, hasn't it, as the third seamer to complement what we're going to have with the captain Cummins and Mitchell Starc opening up. And Boland, I suppose, has been the horse for the course as well. Like, as far as bowling on tracks, it'll give a bit. I had a look at the pitch this morning. It's brown at the moment. It's got grass, live grass for sure, but it's kind of brown in its complexion. I was doing a game at the Oval a couple of weeks ago, a four-day game with Surrey, and it looked exactly the same, and it nipped around for the entirety of the first 2 days before it got better for batting. So I'd anticipate it being similar to that when we rock up on Wednesday morning for morning one. But yeah, Boland, with what we've seen of him, even at Nagpur, which feels like a weird comparison to make, but he was so consistent. And you know that in England, you're rewarded for bowling in a shoebox all day long. So it feels like the right call. And where they might weave Nisa into the mix could be with that extra prodigious swing that he gets, like as a bit of a throwback. You don't see many swing bowlers anymore, do you? And with the Duke's ball, he's made himself an expert with that over the last four seasons over here. So it might be that Nisa has more of a role to play against England, but very much plan A is Boland to come on first change. And I suspect Pat Cummins will confirm that between now and when they name the side at the toss.
What's the sense of quest, I suppose, for Australia, as we know their fate for the last, well, for the first grand final, as it were, of Test cricket, and how they missed that on a botched run rate one day in the home summer. And it did feel like they absorbed that and absolutely set themselves to be part of this showpiece a couple of years on.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it was bad over rates at Melbourne, wasn't it? In a test match that they were far gone in. It felt like such a harsh penalty, but so it goes. We all complain about over rates, and Australia paid the price then, and you're right, they reset after that. They won, I think they won five series in a row before they slipped up against India away earlier this year. So they did everything they needed to do to give themselves a foothold in this final. And I think for the generation of players coming through, to me this feels a little bit like 2015, that Ashes series, which saw the end of six careers. Now, that won't be the case. I'm not suggesting that there'll be retirements in England, with the exception of, you know, possibly David Warner, if they don't give him the runway that he's been talking about over the weekend. But this will certainly be the last trip to England for, you know, Warner, Khawaja, possibly Smith. You'd expect Mitchell Starc, Nathan Lyon, a whole bunch of them. And the fact that the World Test Championship is on the front of that makes it all the more important as a legacy piece, doesn't it? Like, if they can win here and then win the Ashes in England for the first time since 2001, drawing a distinction there to the Ashes retention of 2019, it'll cap a lot of careers. So I don't think they need further incentive.
Who would be favourite in this, Colo? Australia or India?
I think India. I mean, my gut says that, like, India's bowling attack is so well suited to playing in England. I don't think they'll struggle to take their 20 wickets if the ball's moving around. But it's line ball stuff, isn't it? I don't think there would be an overarching favourite. I suspect my bias towards India is that I've seen a lot of them, both recently against Australia, but also against England 2 years ago at the Oval. The Oval's a fascinating venue for this one, Jared, because both sides have a comparatively poor record there going back decades. India had a groundbreaking watershed win there in 1971, but had to wait until 2021. But that, to be fair, was a win orchestrated by Jasprit Bumrah on the final afternoon, and Bumrah, as we know, is injured. So, but nevertheless, Mohammad Shami is as good as you get in these conditions. Mohammad Siraj has been a nightmare for Australia since he burst onto the scene three or four seasons ago. They'll have the experience of Umesh Yadav, the all-rounder Shardul Thakur, who had an excellent test match at the Oval 2 years ago. And that the experienced engine room, the difference between this side and the one that played Australia a few months ago, Ajinkya Rahane, who was captain when they beat Australia a couple of summers ago, he's back in the middle order. His first test cricket for 18 months with Pujara, with Kohli, with Rohit Sharma, and then, of course, Shubman Gill, the man who made a century against Australia at Ahmedabad the last time the sides met. So their top five is good as gold. And then you've got Jadeja at six as the swingman. And the wicket-keeping spot might be the only position on the team sheet that's hard to work out which way they'll go. K.S. Bharat, who kept against Australia in India, I thought we'd never see him again after he dropped a couple of very straightforward chances in that test. I thought that was him done. But evidently, he's the man in possession. And Ishan Kishan, who they've brought out to England as the more sort of white ball-oriented player, that he'll be overlooked in favour of a more conventional wicketkeeper. But still, that could change if they go with four quicks and don't feel the need to have a keeper up to the stumps too often.
Colo, the talk of futures inside the Australian camp has been pretty rich over the past few days. Obviously, Warner nominated his desired finishing point. It was interesting to see Steve Smith. There was no sort of sentiment in his assessment of Warner, as you've got to make runs, which I must admit was where I landed yesterday. It was such a, like, the moment where Warner could have chosen his time is in the past, and he's nominating his time now. Is what's that dynamic been like?
Yeah, it's a good question. Look, they're still pretty supportive of each other publicly, aren't they? On the matter of runs, I just think it's worth noting that press conference the other day, Warner said this explicitly, that he'll need to keep making runs to go the whole way. It wasn't like he was... remember Steve Waugh when he retired? He said, I'm going to play this last series and I'll retire at the SCG. And it was at a time in his career when there were diminishing returns, but there was never any doubt about Steve Waugh having that farewell lap. Warner knows that if he doesn't make runs this week, he may not play at Edgbaston. And if he does make runs this week and misses out at Edgbaston at Lords, he may not be there at Leeds. So he knows that it's a kind of test or two-test proposition. George Bailey was pretty honest about that. Pat Cummins has been pretty honest about it as well. So, yeah, I think that the one thing to remember about what Warner's saying, I kind of admire it. He knows that he's got barely nothing left as a test cricketer, and he's setting himself one more goal. Can he rise to the challenge one last time against an adversary who've had it all over him in 2019, and a bowler like Stuart Broad, who you can guarantee Broad will be in the mixer for the first test at Edgbaston. Yeah, they'll be without Jack Leach, which will be another factor that England need to consider. I don't know if you've seen this, Jerry. There's reports overnight that they've put out the SOS to Moeen Ali,
yeah,
who's not played test cricket for 2 years, and George Tabell had this story that Moeen has formally been approached by the powers that be to see whether he'll come out of retirement for the Ashes, which strikes me as bewildering, given that Moeen's not, you know, not bowled with a red ball for 2 years. But even so, factoring all of that in, you would think that the probability of Warner getting to that designated finish line, I don't know, is it 50-50 at best? But I kind of admire that he wants to have one more go. And if he makes it, so be it. But it'll be based on his returns, not on his PR.
How curious is England in what's about to transpire? So the home side was flawless in its preparation at Lords, and it was such a timely reminder of what the Baz Ballers can do. How curious are they to watch what's about to transpire?
Oh, they're just fascinating, aren't they? I think we've all been saying it's 12 months exactly. I think it's 12 months to today when they beat New Zealand at Lords in that first of four run chases in the fourth innings. But we've been saying that whole time, good luck doing it against Australia. But here's the thing, they've done it against everybody else. And yes, the Australian attack will be a step up again. But, you know, last summer they did it against South Africa, who were the second best fast bowling group in the world, so I don't think it's too much of a stretch to think that they will they'll stick to their guns and give it everything they've got. So it does make them compelling. I mean, even little things like Ben Stokes tried to walk out to the presentation on Saturday afternoon wearing a bucket hat. He had to be handed Joe Root's England cap to do the presentation. Like, it's there. Yeah, some of it might be a little bit performative, but they go to such lengths to tell us publicly, express how laissez-faire the whole thing is. Like, I remember seeing Ben Stokes in the breakfast room last year on a test match day, 45 minutes before the first ball was due to be bowled. It's not that they don't care. It's that they're trying to emphasise that you do what you feel like you need to do to be ready to go, and we won't be too heavy-handed. We will. We rather play golf than net. You know, that's pretty clear. We will do things on our own terms. And if it comes off and they beat Australia, if they can, and look, they'd be the second best side in this series. I think it's fair to say Australia are the better side on paper. But if they rock up and defeat Australia again with a completely different game plan to what was successful, let's say 2015 or 2013, it'd be an extraordinary achievement. And it would, in part, help bolster that argument that McCullum and Stokes have both made, that they're not only doing this for the now, they're doing it for the bigger picture of Test cricket and trying to keep it relevant. And I think they have to be applauded for that attitude.
I did wonder, actually, about that. So, World Test Championship, Australia and India, but do they hold the view in England, or you can play for that trophy, but we're actually the best team in Test cricket now?
Well, yeah, the rankings are such an antiquated thing.
Yeah.
And because England started the WTC cycle so abysmally, right? They won one of their previous 17 Test matches.
Yep.
Now they've gone, I think it's 10 from their last 12 as wins since the McCullum Stokes axis took over. So, yes, you could, I mean, that they'd be the informed test side in the world. I don't think there's any doubting that. But they've got, after Australia, they go to India for 5 test matches over their winter. So, and we all know from the lived experience how different it is playing India in India. So in the same way that the Australian elder statesmen are thinking about what they can achieve in the next 7 or 8 weeks with a World Test Championship on the line, followed by the chance to, you know, a little bit of history if they were to win in England, given it's been since 2001. The same applies for Stokes' side. If they beat Australia at home and then go and do something special in India, well, they'll be recognised by history accordingly.
And what have we got in store on SEN Test Cricket from Wednesday night?
It's going to be great. We've got Harsha Bhogle and Ravi Shastri back, Jared, which we're just thrilled about. They're doing television, but they'll be with us for about half an hour a session. And I think it's reasonable to say that they are the two biggest names in the history of Indian cricket broadcasting. And to have them with us and how much work they put into their prep, like, these guys don't rest on their reputations. They do the arts to be the best broadcasters they can be every single day. So just thrilled we got them back. In terms of the Australian contingent voices and names, you'd know well if you'd listened to SCN for a while, Bharat Sundaresan, Peter Lawler, Louis Cameron, the former Victorian seamer who has done a lot of work with us on SEN in the last couple of seasons. We've got Phil Long scoring and giving us all the stats and facts, and the Kesh Raghani will be calling the action with me. So, yeah, really happy with the team we're putting on the park as well.
Terrific, Colo. Enjoy it. We'll talk regularly as all of this unfolds. But, yeah, you'll drift us off to sleep each night. It'd be great.
Thanks, Jared. I really can't wait.
Adam Collins, who's leading our SEN Test Cricket coverage. Tomorrow night, the World Test Championship begins, and then the following Friday is the first night of the Ashes.